Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to Dr. Watson tell us another exciting adventure he shared with his good friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes. And if you ask me, the best way to listen to that story is to do it with a glass of port wine right handy. Petri California Port. No kidding, that Petri Port is just swell for any time good friends get together to talk things over. You couldn't ask for a more delicious wine. Why, just looking at the deep, rich red color of that Petri Port tells you that here's a wine with a flavor that comes right from the heart of sun-ripened grapes. If you haven't ever tried Petri Port, why not get a bottle and have a glass after dinner tomorrow night? It's the perfect after-dinner wine, you know. And share that port with your family and your friends. Don't forget, when you serve Petri Port, you can serve it proudly. Because, after all, the name Petri is the proudest name in the history of American wine. And now let's keep our weekly appointment. Good evening, Dr. Watson.
Good evening, Mr. Bartell. Draw up a chair.
Thanks.
That's it. By the way, do you know what date it is?
November 5th, isn't it?
That's quite correct. In England, it's known as Guy Fawkes Day. Ever heard of it?
Something to do with a gunpowder plot, isn't it?
Yes, Mr. Bartell, it is. And as Sherlock Holmes and I had a very unusual adventure on the 5th of November many years ago, it seems appropriate that I should tell you about it tonight. But before I begin, I think I might help you to appreciate the true flavor of the story, so I tell you a little about the origin and customs of a Guy Fawkes Day.
It's a well idea, Dr. Watson.
Well, my boy, on November the 5th, 1605, exactly 340 years ago today, King James I was about to attend the opening of Parliament when a plot was discovered to blow up the House of Lords during the ceremony.
And the chief conspirator was Guy Fawkes, I suppose?
Yes, he was. He was captured in a vault immediately below the House of Lords, a vault full of barrels and gunpowder. Of course, he and his fellow conspirators were executed. And ever since then, November the 5th has been known as Guy Fawkes Day.
Well, how's it celebrated, Doctor?
Well, it's a great time for the youngsters, Mr. Bartell. They black their faces, throng the streets begging for pennies, and build bonfires in which to burn effigies of Guy Fawkes. These effigies are life-size dummies stuffed with straw and dressed in old clothes. The children parade chanting rhymes. Now, let me see. Who is? Please to remember the 5th of November. Guy Fawkes, Guy, hit him in the eye.
Kids must have quite a time. Sort of like Halloween, huh, Doctor?
Oh, not at all unlike it, my boy. Well, now that I've told you something about the customs of Guy Fawkes Day, I'll get on with my story. It began just before lunch, I remember, on November the 5th, 1899. The day was foggy and cold, and Holmes and I were seated each side of a blazing fire in our Baker Street room. From outside, we could hear the sound of voices laughing and singing. Suddenly, Holmes rose and crossed to the window, opened it, and looked out. Then he turned to me and spoke.
Children are having a great time, Watson, aren't they?
Yes, it cost me a shilling's worth of pennies to walk here this morning.
Has it occurred to you, Watson, that the gunpowder plot offers very promising material to the speculative mind.
One way, Holmes. I say it's confoundedly chilly in here. Do you think you might close that window?
I'm sorry, old chap. As I was saying, the gunpowder plot offers very promising material to the speculative mind. I've made something of a study of the historical records of the case. There's more than little evidence to suggest that King James was never in any real danger.
Never in any danger? What makes you say that?
Knowledge of the proposed dastardly scheme came to light early, but James Stuart, King of England, the possessor of a shrewd and diabolical mind, used the spectacular discovery of the plot to try and bolster his waning popularity as well as to justify increased religious persecution.
That's the first I ever heard of it, Holmes.
I dare say, old fellow, but it's true just the same. I'm afraid James Stuart, King of England, was an unscrupulous tyrant. Come in. Yes, Mrs. Hudson?
There is a gentleman to see you, Mr. Holmes. He says it's very important. And he asked him to give you his card.
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Hudson. Ask him to come up, will you, please?
Aye, sir.
Who is it, Holmes?
A gentleman with a remarkably fine sense of timing. Read his card for yourself.
James Stuart. Great Scott, that's an extraordinary coincidence that he should arrive just as we're talking about James Stuart, King of England.
Come in.
Mr. James Stuart.
How do you do, Mr. Stuart? My name is Sherlock Holmes, and this is my colleague, Dr. Watson.
How do you do, sir?
Mr. Holmes, you've got to help me. I'm walking about in mortal fear of my life. You've got to help me.
Mr. Stuart, I suggest that you sit down. I'll do anything in my power to help you, but you must compose yourself first and tell me quietly what it is that's frightening you.
How can I compose myself when I may be dead within a few hours?
Now, Mr. Stuart, I'm a doctor. I really think that if I give you a sedative, you'd find that...
How can you talk of sedatives when I... My heart. Doctor, my heart.
All right, now, here, let me help you onto this sofa. That's it.
I imagine the brandy will be in order, Watson.
Yes, Holmes, and I'll give him some digitalis. A fellow with a bad heart like this shouldn't allow himself to get so excited.
Here you are, Mr. Stuart. Drink this.
That's it. And now this, Mr. Stuart.
What is it?
It's digitalis.
Very well.
You feel better, sir?
Yes, Mr. Holmes. Yes, I do. You're right. I shouldn't get so excited. My heart can't stand it, you know.
Watson, is he well enough to talk to you?
Yes, if he doesn't excite himself again.
I'll be careful, Doctor. I'll take it quietly. Mr. Holmes, when you saw my card just now, did it strike any responsive chord?
Well, naturally it did, sir. Who could fail to be intrigued when a James Stuart calls to see one on Guy Fawkes Day?
It isn't just coincidence that my name is James Stuart. I've got royal blood in my veins. People know of it. And that's another reason they're out to kill me. They're jealous of my heritage. Every instinct I have is a royal one. Now, you gentlemen know that falconry is a king's sport. And my greatest hobby is the breeding and training of falcons.
Mr. Stuart, owing to the state of your health, I suggest that you be more economical with your explanation. In fact, I think it might be better if I question you.
Very well, Mr. Holmes.
Now, you say that your life is in danger. What evidence do you have to substantiate that claim?
My cousin, Guy Falconby, has threatened it. You see, Mr. Holmes, he and I are the only heirs to a wealthy uncle. His fortune will go to the surviving heir. If I were dead, Guy would inherit everything.
It seems to me, Mr. Stuart, that you should have applied to Scotland Yard for protection.
I did, Dr. Watson. Only a few days ago, I saw a certain inspector... Lestrade, I think his name was, and he laughed at my fears.
Lestrade? Oh. And he laughed at you. Then in that case, there may be something in your story, sir. You say that your cousin has threatened to kill you. Has he indicated the method he intends to employ?
Aye, he has. And it's a devilish plot. Guy has a bitter, twisted sense of humor, gentlemen. Even when he's planning as dastardly a thing as a murder. I am James Stuart. He is Guy Falconby. Which is near enough to Guy Fawkes. Today is the 5th of November, and he's planning to blow me up.
Come, sir, come. You can't expect us to believe that.
But it's true. He warned me, and the celebrations that are going on in the streets of London today would make a rare cloak for his activities.
I must confess, Mr. Stuart, that I find your story most unconvincing. All your evidence appears to depend on conversations held between you and this cousin of yours. You have no facts to support. Potentiate your claims.
But I have.
Then please, let's hear them.
I live at 23 Cavendish Square. A week ago, the house next door to me was let to a new tenant. Almost immediately, workmen became very active there. They were digging in the cellars, Mr. Holmes. I could hear the sounds of picks and shovels through the walls.
Digging in the cellar? Does sound significant, doesn't it, Holmes?
Extremely. Did you observe any other activities of the workmen, Mr. Stuart?
Aye, Mr. Holmes. Vans have been delivering large packing cases to the basement during the last 2 days. I know what's in them, too. It's gunpowder. I tell you, they're planning to blow me up today.
No. Steady. You mustn't excite yourself again.
What shall I do, Mr. Holmes?
I think, sir, it would be better for you to rest here for a while and then go to a nearby hotel, I would suggest, the Shaftesbury. And wait there until you hear from us.
And where are you gentlemen going?
Watson and I, after donning suitable disguises, will visit the house adjoining yours in Cavendish Square. I think an examination of the cellar there might prove most illuminating.
This must be the house, all right, Holmes. The empty packing cases are still by the foot of the basement steps.
Come on, Watson, let's go down and explore.
Upon my soul, feel a little self-conscious in these clothes.
You don't need to, my dear Jeff. You look the most authentic inspector of plumbing. If anyone challenges us, you'd better let me do the talking, though. I think my accent might be a little more convincing. Shh. Listen.
I can't hear anything.
Exactly. We may reasonably assume that either the workmen are observing the Guy Fawkes holiday, or that their work is done. Let's try this door.
It's unlocked.
Yes. Well, this is too easy, Watson. You must be prepared for a trap. Come on.
I've got my revolver handy if there's any trouble.
Don't use it unless I tell you to. Remember, we're supposed to be plumbing inspectors.
It's pitch black in here. I can't see a thing.
Strike a match. You can find a gas jet.
Strike a match? The cellar may be full of gunpowder.
Take the risk, old chap.
Here's a gas jet. I'll light it. Now we can see a little.
I think the workmen have completed their job. See that new wood on the crude door in the corner over there?
Now, where does it lead to, you sir?
Let's find out. Also unlocked. Miner's lantern waiting conveniently for us on this ledge. This is ridiculously easy. Now I'm sure it's a trap.
I'll light the lantern. Great Scott. Tunnel.
Yes, the tunnel leading towards Mr. Stewart's house next door. Let's explore it.
Holmes, look. Look at the barrels. I bet they're full of gunpowder.
Undoubtedly. We've observed the fuses as well. Yes, the complete equipment for another gunpowder plot.
I can't believe my eyes. What a fantastic plan, but how could the murderer be certain that Stewart would be killed in the explosion?
I think that's easily answered, Watson. Remember Mr. Stewart's bad heart? In his present state of apprehension, an exploding firecracker would be enough to kill him.
I suppose so. Well, what's this lying on the floor? It's curious. It's a funny strip of silk. A little ring on one.
Let me see it, Watson. This seems familiar. By Jove, I believe it's a Jess.
A Jess? But no, sir.
Last piece of evidence necessary to confirm the conclusion.
Come out of there! And keep your hands above your head! I've got a revolver.
Right, y'all, Governor. We ain't doing no harm. Now, remember, Watson, I'm doing the talking.
Come on. Out you come.
Well, you're a comical-looking pair. What were you doing in there?
Me and my mate got a message to come here and look over the plumbing, mister.
Plumbers, eh? Do you have any identification?
Yes, sir. Here's my badge. We're inspectors for the London County Council.
Oh, that's all right, my man. I saw the basement door open and I thought burglars might be here.
You're the owner of this house, sir?
Yes, but my agent let it recently to some tenants who've been behaving rather queerly, I'm told. So I came round here to see what was happening.
If you're the owner, sir, perhaps you'd give me some facts for me records. I've got to fill in my records, you know.
What do you want to know?
Well, your name, please, sir.
Falkenby. Guy Falkenby.
Look, Alfie, hold your nose.
What did he say?
Nothing, sir. He's got hiccups. He's had a bad case of them. Haven't been able to stop him for months. Alfie, here, give me a pencil. And now, sir, your name is Guy Falkenby. What's the name of the tenants this house is let to?
Well, three of them.
You know their names, sir? Got to have them for me records, you know.
Yes, the names are Winter, Ropewood, and Kane.
Winter, Ropewood, and Kane's, right, sir. Sounds as if they might be a firm of solicitors, don't they, sir?
Well, perhaps they are. I haven't met them.
Oh, just one more question, sir, and then I'll even bother you no more.
Well, what is it, my religion or my grandmother's maiden name?
No, sir, nothing like that. I just wondered who's living in the house next door on that side. We've had a complaint from there, too. Their pipes is bunged up.
Well, my cousin lives there. His name's James Stewart.
Mr. James Stewart. Much obliged, sir. Me and my mate will be going next door now. Come on, Alfie.
I'm not surprised his pipes are bunged up, as you so graphically put it. He's a great one for practical jokes about the house. As a matter of fact, he's planning one of them tonight. Oh, well, that's no concern of yours. By the way, my man, what's your name?
Nivett, sir. Tom Nivett. Come on, Alfie. We got work to do.
Holmes, I wish you'd tell me what's going on. Why, we've taken this cab back to Lake Street.
Get out of these clothes. They've served their purpose, and there's more serious work afoot.
Well, I'm confused about our interview with Guy Fawkenby. Why did you say your name was Tom Knivett?
Oh, a touch of vanity, old fellow.
Vanity? How do you mean?
Consider the names in this case so far, Watson. James Stewart says that he's been threatened by Guy Fawkenby, a name, as Mr. Stewart points out, not unlike Guy Fawkes. You recall the names of the three tenants that Mr. Fawkenby gave us a few minutes ago?
Yes. Winter, Rookwood, and Kane. What's that got to do with it?
A great deal. Thomas Winter, Ambrose Rookwood, and Robert Kane's were the three men executed with Guy Fawkes in the original gunpowder plot in 1605.
Good Lord, but where does Tom Knivett, the name you gave yourself, fit into the picture?
Thomas Knivett was the Westminster magistrate who arrested the conspirators. Since the would-be murderer has such an academic knowledge of the original plot, I thought I'd let him know that he was up against an opponent worthy of his steel.
We'll hear the rest of Dr. Watson's story in just a few seconds. Just about time for me to remind you that if you want a wine that's sure to please the ladies, you can't miss with Petri California Muscatel. That's because Petri Muscatel is a golden wine with one of the most luscious flavors you ever tasted. Did you ever taste a big, plump muscat grape that's ripened in the sun? If you have, then you know what to expect when you taste Petri Muscatel. That's a wonderful wine. Perfect after dinner and swell when company comes. Just remember that, won't you? Petri Muscatel. Well, Doctor, you and Mr. Holmes were certainly having yourselves quite a Guy Fawkes day. What happened when you got back to Baker Street?
We quickly changed out of our disguises and back into our ordinary clothes. I was still pretty much in the dark, as usual. And I kept questioning Holmes as to our next move. He was in a state of suppressed excitement. And it was obvious as he spoke to me that he was anxious to be off.
No, Dawdle. There's so much work ahead of us.
Dawdle, I'm not dawdling. I'm getting as far as I can. What's our next move, anyhow?
We'll split forces. I must get hold of my band of street urchins, the Baker Street irregulars. I'm going to surround Mr. Stewart's house in Cavendish Square, and they'll be invaluable for such purpose.
What do you want me to do?
Go to the Shaftesbury Hotel and collect Mr. Stewart, then return with him to his house and wait me there. I shall join you as soon as I've rounded up the irregulars, but I must warn you, don't leave Mr. Stewart for a moment. Don't let him out of your sight until you see me again.
Well, of course I won't, Holmes, but I must say, the idea of all that gunpowder in the cellar doesn't make me feel any
good. Oh, have faith in me, have faith in me.
What?
You know, I wouldn't expose you to any danger if I could avoid it. And I assure you that I shall join you and Mr. Stewart very shortly. You have your revolver?
Yes, of course.
Good. And give Mr. Stewart this revolver, will you? Tell him that I insist that he carries it. I fear that his own has probably been tampered with.
Oh, that's your Holmes. I'll see that he has it. This is a strange business, I must say. That Guy Fawkenby seems such a decent sort of fellow.
Yes, he appeared to be a most amiable man, didn't he? This is indeed an unusual case, Watson. We're up against one of the most sinister and twisted antagonists that we've ever met. Well, old chap, I'm leaving now. I'll join you soon. And don't forget, stay close to Mr. Stewart. Stay very close to him.
Oh, Dr. Watson, I wish your friend were here.
Anna, don't get so excited, Mr. Stewart. He'll be here any moment now. You still got the revolver that I gave you?
Yes, it's in my pocket. But what's the good of a revolver if there should be an explosion? Answer me that if you can.
Well, you must have faith in Mr. Holmes, sir. He's arranging now to have this house of yours surrounded by his band of street urchins. They'll see that no one gets to the cellar next door to light the fuses.
Ah, a bunch of children. How can they do anything?
How can they do anything? You don't know the Baker Street irregulars, Mr. Stewart. And it's a perfect day for them to operate. There's black-faced boys begging for pennies. They'd pass unnoticed anywhere.
I hope you're right. But I have a premonition, Doctor. There's going to be a tragedy. I know it.
No, sir. Take it easy. Take it easy. Remember your heart. You're in splendid hands when Sherlock Holmes is on the case. Here he is now. Holmes, I must say, I'm glad to see you.
Have you received your visitor yet?
Visitor? We've seen no one.
Then be on the alert. I've just been questioning the boys surrounding this house. A few moments ago, some children pulled a small cart up to the back door, a cart containing a life-sized dummy. My irregulars thought it was an effigy on its way to a bonfire.
Well, why shouldn't it be?
I have a reason to believe that it's someone visiting you in disguise, Mr. Stewart. A visitor who is mounting the back stairs at this very moment.
You've got to stand by me, Holmes. You've got to protect me.
Don't worry, sir. I'm in.
Look! Look at that apparition!
Wait, Scotter. A Guy Fawkes dummy. A dark lantern in his hand, and it's walking.
And also talking, I trust.
Keep away from me. I've got a revolver.
Six and a state for Victoria's sake. If you won't give me one, I'll take two. The better for me and the worse for you.
It's Guy Fawkenberg.
Keep away from me, do you hear?
The better for me and the worse for you.
All right, then. I'm going to fire.
Hear me, Mr. Stewart. The revolver I provided you with seems to be unloaded. How very odd.
What in thunder's all this about?
You have just witnessed an attempted murder, Watson.
Murder? What are you talking about? This is a game. James and I had arranged the whole thing.
You may have thought it was a game, Mr. Falconby, but I assure you that your cousin...
Grab him, Watson! Look, he seems to be leaving us. Leave me alone! Take your hands off me!
My heart.
Help me put him on the sofa. That's it. Get him some digitalis.
I don't want to appear unnecessarily stupid, but will someone tell me what this is all about?
Oh, treasure, Mr. Falconby. Your cousin had planned one of the most fantastic murder plots that I've ever encountered. Came to us for the story that you had threatened his life.
But that's ridiculous. I'm very fond of him.
Of course it's ridiculous. The whole plot is quite ridiculous. He leased the house next door, had a tunnel dug and gunpowder and fuses planted there. He even entered the name of the tenants as Winter, Rookwood, and Keynes to give the apparent plot a further authenticity.
You mean my cousin was the real tenant?
Certainly. However, he was clumsy enough to drop that piece of silk with the wire ring on the end that you found in the cellar, Watson.
The thing you called a jess.
And what's a jess?
It's a strap that goes round a falcon's leg to which its leash is fastened. You will remember that Mr. Stewart informed us that falconry is his hobby. And it therefore indicated that he had been in the cellar and consequently must have known about the whole plot.
And all he was trying to do was to build up in our minds the belief that his cousin was trying to kill him.
Exactly, my dear fellow. Had we believed him, of course he could have shot you just now, Mr. Falconby, in apparent self-defense.
Good Lord, what a fantastic plot. I still can't quite believe it.
Mr. Falconby, why are you dressed as a Guy Fawkes dummy?
Well, it was James' idea. He said that he was going to dress up too and that we'd go round the bonfires tonight and frighten people by appearing as live dummies. But the last message he sent told me to come here, that we'd play a practical joke on a couple of friends of
his. Did he provide the costume you're wearing?
Yes, as a matter of fact, he did.
You searched the pockets for any weapons?
No, but I will.
And while you're doing that, I'll examine this dark lantern. How's the patient, Watson?
Well, I've given him some digitalis. Now I'll get him some bread.
I can't find anything in the pockets.
Here's the answer. Look here. Inside the lantern is a dagger. Your cousin planted it there to substantiate the claim that you were trying to kill him. Had his plans worked, you would have been dead, Mr. Falconby, before you could have told the truth.
Here! Come back here, Mr. Stewart!
Jane! He slipped out of the door.
Confound it! He was faking that heart attack. Come on, Watson, after him!
Please. Romy, here comes the Lord Mayor of London, chump.
Please excuse me, I'm trying to find a friend of mine. It's most important. Holmes! Holmes, where are you?
Here I am, Watson.
I hear you calling me.
Out of the way, please. I'm coming, Holmes.
Why don't you send in a postcard?
You got away from me in the crowd.
And I'm afraid Mr. Stewart got away from us.
Well, we'll never find him in this mob.
He's a dangerous man. There's no knowing what he might do. Where are the irregulars? Ah, there's Wiggins.
Wiggins!
Hello, Mr. Elms. Dr. Watson.
Wiggins, did you see a man run out of that house a few minutes ago?
No, Governor. Perhaps Charlie did. Hey, Charlie, come over here. It's Mr. Elms.
All right. I bet Charlie didn't see anything, though. He's got some sloppy girl with him.
Hello, Mr. Holmes and Dr. Watson.
Hello, Charlie.
Charlie, hello.
Did you see a man run through this crowd a few minutes ago, a tallish man with a gray mustache?
Yes, I did. A man came running out of the house over there.
That's the house. Where'd he go?
He ran down toward the shop.
And he stole our dummy, he did.
The one we were going to burn in a bonfire. I tried to stop him, but he got away.
Holmes, look up there on the roof. There's a figure. By Jim, I believe it's James Stewart.
That's the man. He's the one that stole our dummy.
He's standing up on the roof. He's going to jump.
If he does, he's going to land in the bonfire.
There he goes.
He is jumping! Right in the middle of the fire.
It's awful. He'll be burned up.
Now, Buddy Wiggins, that wasn't the man who fell into the bonfire.
What do you mean?
From the gyrations that the figure performed as it fell, I'm convinced that Mr. Stewart threw the stolen dummy to try and put us off the track.
Then Stewart's still up there.
He is, Watson. Come along, old boy. It's up onto the rooftops for us. Up onto the rooftops. My hand, Watson?
Yeah. I've got it. Up you come. Up. That's it.
Phew. Seems to me that the fire escapes must be designed for giants.
Keep your eyes skinned, old fellow. Stuart's a dangerous man. He might be hiding behind those chimney stacks. Come on.
My soul, this is a strange place to be on Guy Fawkes Night.
Yes, a comprehensive case, Watson. It starts in a cellar and ends on a rooftop.
Look, Holmes. By the parapet there. Crumpled body of Mr. Stewart.
Looks to me as if he's... Yes, he's... dead, Holmes.
Well, it's not surprising. The effort of carrying the dummy up here and throwing it, combined with his own state of excitement, is too much for him. Well, quite frankly, I can't say that I'm sorry.
No, indeed. He planned a murder, and if it hadn't been for you, he would have succeeded. An extraordinary case, Holmes.
Yes, old chap. One that should long make us remember the 5th of November.
By Jove, yes.
Please to remember the 5th of November, gunpowder, treason, and plot. I see no reason why gunpowder treason should ever be forgot.
Well, Doctor, as you boys would say, that story was a bit of exciting, what?
Yes, yes, yes. And even now, I sort of lose my breath almost when I remember climbing that fire escape.
You know, Doctor, it seems to me that those two fellows certainly went out of their way to celebrate Guy Fawkes Day. I mean, well, now take me. When I've got a little celebrating to do, I like to do it quietly. Some friends, a glass of port.
Petri port, of course.
What else?
Oh, leave it to you. No matter what the occasion is, you can somehow make it the perfect occasion for Petri wine. How'd you do it?
Don't ask me how I do it.
I can't believe he found them.
He seems sorry.
We very clearly told him not to look up there.
I'm honestly impressed that he was able to do it.
Right? What did he balance on that big chair? Or...
Yeah, I mean, I guess he'll just know what his gifts are this year.
I really thought we had hidden them well.
If they can find their presence, they can find a gun.
911, what is your emergency?
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns. Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Thank you, Ad Council. Good morning. That was The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Gunpowder Plot, with an original air date of the 5th of November, 1945. It says here it was suggested by an incident in The Adventures of Devil's Foot by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. No relation to this Arthur. Here with the Grand Hour on 91.5 FM, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. But old Nigel Bruce there, he kind of sounds constipated, doesn't he? All these, from what I was reading, Edith Meiser wanted to somehow adapt the Sherlock Holmes stories to radio, the ones that they didn't do pretty much verbatim from Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. She wrote, I have no indication that she actually wrote this particular, the Gunpowder Plot, but more than likely she had some sort of involvement with it. For the second half of the show, I'm going to go ahead and play a little Cloak and Dagger again. I didn't really put a good show together because I just kind of wanted to reacclimate myself with the board. However, this isn't a bad story. Something else here. Again, my name is Arthur, and this is the Grand Hour here at 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Thanks for tuning in.
Are you willing to undertake a dangerous mission behind the enemy lines, knowing you may never return alive?
What you have just heard is the question asked during the war to agents of the OSS, ordinary citizens who to this question answered, yes.
This is Cloak and Dagger.
Black warfare, espionage, international intrigue. These are the weapons of the OSS. Today's story, The Roof of the World, concerning two American agents who travel into the far-off and mysterious land of Tibet on a secret pilgrimage, is suggested by actual incidents recorded in the Washington files of the Office of Strategic Services. A story that can now be told.
It came at us suddenly, out of the darkness. A shaggy monster over 15 feet high. None of us said a word for a minute. We just stared at it.
The tusks. Look at the length of them.
The tusks of this monster must have been at least 12 feet long. And I knew myself that if I hadn't seen it, stood right in front of it, I wouldn't have believed it actually existed either. But I saw it. There was definite proof. It did live. Once.
Okay, lights. Put on the lights, please. All right now, quiet please, quiet. What you have just seen is the last of our afternoon slides here in the Museum of Natural History on prehistoric animals. This last mammoth was a species of a true elephant which was found in Tibet during and before the Ice Age. Now, are there any questions?
Yeah, how do you get out of here?
Well, if you'll all follow the guide, he'll take you into the next room where you can actually see the skeletons of these monsters, which paleontologists have reconstructed from fossils and actual bones discovered in the earth.
Philip. Oh, Phil.
Oh, hello, Esther. Were you here for the whole lecture?
No, just the last part of it. But you were sensational.
Flattery will get you nowhere. What's that?
Oh, telegram. Here, just came to the office.
Thanks. It's not for me, it's for us.
Oh, who's it from?
Washington. The Office of Strategic Services wants to see us.
Office of Strategic... Now, why in the world do they want us?
Well, there's one way to find out.
Mr. and Mrs. Malden, we know your reputation as geologists and explorers. We know you've traveled the Far East together several times.
That's true, Colonel.
Now, at this stage of the war, Germany is pushing eastward across Africa to Suez, and Japan is thrusting westward across China into India. If the Axis partners meet, their junction will be Central Asia, and dominating that meeting point will be Tibet.
What do you want us to do, Colonel?
We want volunteers to make a pilgrimage to the Dalai Lama, High Priest of Tibet. It'll be a goodwill mission to get them on our side. It involves a great deal of danger.
Yes, we know. Esther?
Well, as long as you're sure that mammoth elephant disappeared from there centuries ago, I'm willing. A few weeks later, we were flown to India where we were given a car. Then the tour was started out across the border to a village called Gyuksam at the foot of the Himalaya Mountains. Once there, we were to pick up pack animals and a guide and start our journey to the Holy City.
Well, these roads couldn't have been any narrower or any rockier.
Well, they weren't designed for modern travel.
You can say that again.
Phil.
Hmm?
Are you worried about something?
I'm worried about a lot of things.
For instance?
For instance, this is the worst possible time of the year to be traveling up that mountain. It's almost spring up there, and the thaw's setting in. It's going to loosen the snow and ice all along the way.
Well, we'll just have to be more careful, that's all. Oh, Phil, look, round the bend of the road. That's the village, isn't it?
That's it. That's it.
Wait a minute, Phil. Slow down. Look.
Good Lord.
I should have said it was a village.
Burned to the ground.
The old man who sat wailing and moaning, cross-legged on the ground, was the only one left alive in that village.
Banji tribe come from mountains, steal, kill, set fire to village.
How is it they spared you?
I am priest sent from Dalai Lama to this village many years past. If they kill holy man, great plague and pestilence will be upon them.
Well, tell me, where'd you learn to speak English?
In Holy City was taught.
Well, what do we do now, Phil?
We can't leave him here alone. We'll take him with us and drive until we find another village.
Oh, no, no. I take you.
Huh?
What's that?
A sing to will be guide to Holy City. Here all is lost. Go back to Dalai Lama.
What about pack animals?
A village of Chomda, not far away. We'll go there first.
Chomda was about 10 miles away down the road. It was small, with only a few huts made of sun-dried bricks. Phil was afraid of the spring thaw that was setting in more every day, so we made arrangements with the native chief to start almost immediately.
What do
you say, Sing-tong?
Is Kiang's wild donkeys as good pack animals as other white men has?
Oh. What's he talking about? What other white men? Ask him.
A strangers leave here 2 days ago on way also to Holy City of Rasa. Wear badge with crooked cross.
Phil.
Nazis. We're in a race, Esther. We've got to reach Lhasa before they do.
That was the first we knew that the Germans were ahead of us, going in the same direction, on the same mission. Philip was right. It was going to be a race for time.
Esther, come on. This is no time to pick flowers.
Oh, look at this dwarf rhododendron, Phil. And up ahead, it's like a carpet of blue irises.
There'll be plenty of foliage until we cross the timberline. Then it'll just be cold. And traveling on snow is going to be a lot tougher.
Well, I'm not looking forward to the temperature dropping 100 degrees in 20 miles.
Uh-oh. Watch it. Did you hurt yourself?
No, I just tripped. I guess I must be getting tired. Is it Sing-Too?
Yes, Mrs. Yes.
How soon will we be able to camp?
Cold Springs, less than half mile ahead. We'll camp there for night.
When we reached the springs, I started dinner out of K-rations, which kept our packs light. And by the time I was through, the tent had mushroomed up, and Phil and Sing, too, were inside, straightening the pole and fixing the blankets for the night.
How about food, Esther?
Soup's on.
Very bon. Mala.
I looked up from the fire to find an unpleasant surprise. Six unpleasant surprises, carrying rifles and forming a ring of muddy boots all around me. Who are you, men? What do you want?
Lala. Lala.
Phil!
What is it?
Sing, too!
Where'd they come from?
I don't know. They're just here, that's all.
We are.
Sing, too.
These are some of nomad bandits who raid my village.
Huh?
Niga, Shemo.
What do they want?
Kadia.
They say they take surprise, everything. A guns, too.
Why are they all so ugly?
Leader, shoot off gun to show you he mean. What he say?
Oh, Phil, without our supplies and guns, we'll have to turn back.
Providing they let us turn back.
Nothing, why am I?
They hold you hostage. Send me, hoary man, back to get ransom.
Oh, Phil.
Hold on, hold on. Don't let them know you're afraid of them.
We stood there while they gathered our supplies out of the tent and threw them in a heap by the fire. Sing, too, knew he wouldn't be harmed because he was a holy man. But Phil and I had no idea what was ahead for us.
Get you along.
Get your hands off me, you baboon! Oh, Phil!
Leave her alone, you understand? Sing, too. Tell them we'll come quietly.
Go up! Barling!
I said get your filthy hands off me! The machine gun that riddled the bandit leader came from the direction of the brush. And the six of them went down, one after another. Then there was silence. And we looked up to see our two saviors walking out of the brush in German uniform.
I'm delighted we were able to be of assistance, Americans. I am Commandant Kurt Farbe of the German Army. This is Lieutenant Ernst Kessler.
Right me.
Oh, thank you for saving our lives. I'm Esther Malden, and this is my husband, Philip. Oh, and our guard, Sing Tu.
You do not seem too surprised to see us here.
We're not. Just surprised you're not 2 days ahead of us the way we thought you were.
Then you knew about us? How?
They told us in the village. They also told us you were headed for the holy city.
They talk too much, those native idiots. They can't make this mouth hard.
That's their aunt. And are you also going there?
No. Oh, I mean, we're geologists. We're just on an exploring expedition.
Come. Is it quite nice to lie to your benefactors who have just saved your lives?
I don't get that. Why did you?
Well, we saw the American flag sewn on your clothing. That told us immediately who you were, where you were going. We, as you already know, we are also headed for Lhasa to the Dalai Lama. But our guide was killed. The snow loosened under him as we turned a ledge and he fell.
So you were going back for a guide?
Exactly. But that is some distance away. Time is slipping by.
You have the guide. You will lead us.
Oh, no, we won't. And neither will Sing Tu. Will you, Sing Tu?
We'll do only as friend Americans tell me.
The Flugzeug Hund!
Ach, Ernst, you get too excited over nothing. Now remember, Herr Morden, Frau Morden, you have the guide. We have your supplies and your weapons. Let us pool our resources. Go together.
If you think that at the point of our own guns you're going to make us lead you to Lhasa, you're crazy.
Look, you are scientists. I appeal to your logical minds. Is it not safer that since we are traveling the same direction, we travel together? Once we reach the Dalai Lama, that each of us present the case of his country to him.
If you'll forgive me for repeating, Herr Commandant, we're not going to be pushed along with guns in our backs.
Nein. Who said you would be? Here.
Why, Phil, he's giving us back our pistols.
You see?
We trust strangers, gentlemen?
No. Not yet.
It's all right. Go ahead, open them.
Yeah, open the gun if you like. Go ahead, spin the drum. See the cartridges in the chamber.
Yes, I see them.
Well, we return your guns, loaded as they were. Now shall we forget the war for a while and travel on together?
Okay. Let's try it.
We're lagging behind them, Phil. Shouldn't we catch up to them?
We will. I want to talk to you.
Ooh, I'm cold. A temperature went down so fast once we crossed the timberline, I could almost hear it drop.
What do you think of this situation?
With our friends? I don't know what to think. You trust them?
Of course I don't. Whether they gave us back our guns or not, they're still going to look for a chance to double-cross us before we reach the Holy City.
What are we going to do, Phil?
Just keep an eye out. Look for a way to double-cross them first.
French! Clear brook here. Good water to drink. Come.
Come, my friend. You hear what he says? Water. That will taste better than the whiskey in your flask, eh, Ernst?
We're coming.
We caught up with them, and as we leaned over to fill our canteens from the small, clear brook, there was a sudden rumbling.
Ah, the water's turned muddy suddenly.
Yeah, it's covered with a dirty foam. Lashing to.
Rain.
What's he talking about? It is not raining.
It is in the high regions. That's what turned the water.
But so suddenly.
It happens like that. Races along under the ground, pushing the mud with it.
It's really beginning to thaw, isn't it?
Yes. That's what I was afraid of.
What is there to be afraid of? Answer me!
As the snow starts to melt, it'll start to fall. So just watch your step.
Ernst, is it not good to have three such good guides? We are indeed fortunate, was?
Come, more brook, a long way. We walk.
Walk? Why do you think we have these animals?
Kiang can be turned loose here. We'll get more and more snow. It's best to climb by foot.
Yes, Sing Tu's right. Besides, the animals won't find any place to graze. It's been getting pretty sparse for miles.
And where will they go?
They are wild. We'll find no one way. Hera! Hera!
The packs were heavy, and we were too tired the next 2 days to do much talking. We just watched each other. The jagged paths under us were getting more and more slippery. And below the cliff, we could see a sheer drop of hundreds of feet to the glacier. Above us were the snow peaks, and somewhere beyond, the holy city of Lhasa, towards which small birds of dull brown, gray, and black seemed to point. And then, the third night after the strange pact had been made between our two enemy camps, it happened.
Esther, where are you going?
Oh, to the brook around the bend, Phil. I want to get some water. You take care of the rest.
If you pitch the tent, Herr Morgan, I'll fix the fire. Oh, by the way, where's Elm?
Oh, there it is. I knew I'd seen a brook. Ain't just a little bigger hole in the ice.
Let me carry that back for you.
Lieutenant Kessler, what are you doing here?
I can see you don't want to be friendly. What a pity.
I'll be friendly enough to give you some good advice.
No.
Save that liquor until you really need it. And stop guzzling it if you intend to keep up on this hike. This is no Boy Scout picnic.
I'm touched by your concern for me.
Don't flatter yourself. What are you doing back here anyway?
You really wish to know. I followed you. I knew you were coming to the brook. So I went round the other way.
You what?
You don't like me. You'd like me very much if you got to know me.
No, thanks. Now, please, get out of my way and let me go back.
But, Kleiner, we may not have another chance to be together alone. You're very attractive, even in those heavy clothes.
Yeah, I know, very attractive. Besides, I'm the only woman for miles. Now get out of my way.
I would like to see you in a white gown, with diamond clips at your shoulders. Have you got nice shoulders, Frau Morgan?
Get me alone!
Don't try to pull away
Stop
from
it.
Me!
Stop it, you drunken fool!
Just kiss!
Oh, you big, dumb, drunken Nazi pig!
You watch your tongue!
Get away from me!
What's the matter? Cut it out if you do not! Stop yelling, I say!
Phil!
Stop it! Stop it!
Phil!
Get away, Kessler!
Get away, leave her alone.
And if I don't?
You gave me back my gun, I'll use it.
You have your gun? You would not dare shoot me. Go on, try it, use your gun.
Ernst, that is enough. Genug, schon genug. Wirst betrunken, du Idiot. Do you want him to use his gun on you? Think, Ernst, do you want him to use this gun? He will. I can tell he will.
No.
I give this lady your apologies. I order you.
My apologies, Frau Morlin.
You both have my word an incident like this will not occur again. Shall we eat and make camp for the night now?
All the next day, Phil and Sing Tu kept me between them as we climbed. I wondered how soon we'd see the Holy City and when all this would come to a head.
Look!
When Sing Tu yelled, we turned around and looked in the direction from which we'd just come. A huge ice pillar swayed for a moment, and then... It landed on the path we had come from less than 2 hours before.
Well, this is what we can expect from now on, now that the thaw set in.
Oh, well, I'll expect it, but I won't look forward to it. Mistaken, or are the days getting longer?
Sleepy?
Uh-huh. You know, it was nice of them to let you and Sing Tu and me have this cave to ourselves.
Well, considering that it's too small to hold more than three of us, it wasn't so magnanimous.
Still, they could have tried to grab it for themselves.
Farber seems to be trying to make amends for the way his pal acted the other day.
I wonder what their game is.
Yes, I'd like to know, too. Sing Tu?
Yes. You wish to know how soon we reach Holy City?
He may not talk much, but he's a pretty good mind reader.
Shh. That's it, Sing Tu. How long?
Expect to see gates in distance, perhaps, tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Oh, that's wonderful.
Is it?
Well, isn't it?
It means time's run out, Esther. If they're going to pull anything, they're going to pull it now.
The Germans were camped under a ledge which protected them from the wind, about 50 feet from us across a narrow crevasse. In spite of all the things that had happened before, or might be going to happen ahead, it was strangely peaceful up there. In the west, a fan of pink rays from the sun shot up from behind the snow range, and overhead a few bright stars twinkled. Presently, the fan flickered and disappeared. And then, in the glow of the full moon, I saw what looked like a long procession of ghosts in the distance, but were actually cascades of snow, melting and falling hundreds of feet, leaping from ledge to ledge. In the morning, the air was crystal clear, and we saw it.
The Holy City. Esther, do you see it?
I expected only to return again when I die.
Oh, it's beautiful. How long will it take us to reach it?
You will not reach it at all, my friends.
Don't start something you can't finish, Herr Commandant.
Phil.
Get behind me, back in the cave.
You should have been more friendly to me, Frau Morley. Perhaps I would have taken you with us.
Go on. Draw your gun. Shoot us.
Go ahead.
What's the big joke?
Do you think we would have been fools enough to give you loaded guns?
But I saw them. I broke open the gun and saw the cartridges.
Did you take one out and examine it? Why don't you do it now?
Phil, look, I opened mine. It's a blank cartridge.
Now, surely, Frau Morden, you understand why I took care not to let your husband become too excited the night Ernst here tried to be friendly. I didn't want to take a chance of your finding out too soon. We shall give you regards to the Dalai Lama.
Go on, shoot us. Go on. Kill us with your blank guns, if you can.
That's not a bad idea. Esther.
Ernst, look out!
Back in the cave, quick.
Phil took them at their word and actually killed them with his blank gun. The shots vibrated enough to loosen the heavily piled snow, break the crust at the rim of the ledge, and start the slide that avalanched down to the Germans. It threw them over the side and buried them somewhere on the cliffs below us, under rock, ice, and snow.
Gone? They are gone.
Oh, the thaw worked for us, didn't it?
Yes. Come on, Singh Tu. You lead. We'll follow.
We could see the holy city, but it was still 25 miles away. It was 2 days' travel of an almost vertical descent into the valley. And we arrived at dusk at the magnificent red and white palace that overlooked the city. It was a week before we saw the Dalai Lama. Our entrance into his presence was conducted with the utmost ceremony. Tall, grim-faced monks lined the hall. Their 6'4" frames made even more massive by layers of stiff gold brocade. The walls were carved with strange images and Tibetan inscriptions. Then the gong was struck again. We were ushered into the throne room.
Esther, look.
Quiet. Must not talk. Come. Dalai Lama will see you now.
We walked on thick rugs that were brilliant in color and depicted the waves of the sea, clouds, and emblems of happiness. Then we saw a throne of yellow satin at the end of the great room, and on it, robed in burgundy and gold satin, with a crown on his head and a table of jewels beside him, sat the Dalai Lama, a boy of 6.
Come closer. Come. I will throw the silk longevity scarf over your heads to welcome you.
We thank you for your welcome, Your Serenity. We bring you gifts from our leader.
I accept your gifts with great thanks. How is your president?
He is well, thank you.
Bring the gifts to me. Let me see.
They gave him the gifts, and he looked at each one carefully. After a while, servants began to pass bowls of rice and glasses of black tea. I noticed that a special taster took a sip of the Lama's tea before it touched his sacred lips.
Mr. and Mrs. Walden?
Yes, Your Serenity.
Throw a pinch of rice over your shoulder. It will bring good luck.
Your Serenity, we've come to talk about peace and friendliness between our two countries.
There is no need to talk. Come here. I'll tie 3 knots in your scarf. There.
What's that?
Means only interview at an end.
But we've accomplished nothing.
His Serenity has tied 3 knots in American's longevity scarf. He has blessed them. Our countries will be friends.
The success of the mission of these 2 OSS geologists helped to lay the foundations of friendship between Tibet and the United States, and to forestall any possibility of Tibet's cooperation with our Axis enemies. Thus, once again, the report of another agent ends with the words,
mission accomplished.
Listen again next week for another true adventure from the files of the OSS on
Cloak and Dagger.
I don't think I'm going to play another Cloak and Dagger next week. That was rather interesting, though, I will say. That was Cloak and Dagger, titled The Roof of the World, with an original air date of the 13th of August, 1950. My name is Arthur. This has been the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. I'll be back next week. A little bit more familiar here with the studio again, so I'll try and put together a show that I really wanted to do instead of shows just trying to filler stuff, which wouldn't All that not in